so. Yes, Ruth. Say again. Yeah. Yeah. Did you get that? She was saying, what's the material to back up the idea of each child having a birthright to a mother and to a father who are married? A part of me wants to say, again, it's in the natural law. But the other thing, too, is, and actually one of the things that the sheet points out, is the sociological statistics. They cite many statistics that they looked at children who were raised in families where a mother and father lived together, loved each other, and even down to like academic scores and how the suicide rate was lower. And I mean, they cite all of these amazing sociological kind of statistics. I think that's proof enough, you know, that science backs this up. And the fact...
Broken families.
Say again?
Even in broken families, better
than... Yeah. And I think science is going to continue to back it up as we see, unfortunately, but as we see more and more homosexual couples adopting children, because that's a relatively new thing, but as that continues, as unfortunately I'm sure it will, we'll have a whole new pool of statistics that I have no doubt are going to continue to back that up. And in fact, that's already legal in the state of Maryland. So one of those other things that they explained was homosexual couples can already adopt children without it being a marriage. So, yes, sir?
Yes, on the same point, the homosexual marriage, which has been legal in the Netherlands for a number of years, most of a decade, there have been studies conducted there that show where you have same-sex partners, that the average duration of their partnership is a year and a half. And in that year and a half, in these committed partnerships, they have 12 additional partners on the outside. You have to ask, how can you call that a stable...
How committed is that?
...to raise children?
Yeah.
This is Maria Zarudo's study, professor in Amsterdam.
Yeah. And of course, you'll have people point out the exception. You know, the homosexual couple that's been living with each other and has actually been in an exclusive relationship for 50 years.
True.
And they are the exception.
There are people working in the state house.
Right.
Yes.
Some of our own representatives.
This is the average.
Right.
Reported.
And
in Canada, there's been a more recent study that says much the same thing.
Yeah. And not to get too much into homosexuality per se, because again, I covered that in a previous talk, but... There is something about the very nature of homosexuality. I've read some interesting things on this in the seminary, but the very nature of homosexuality is quite self-gratifying. There is something about it that's turned inward. The fact that you are seeking to pleasure and be pleasured by someone like you. I mean, it sounds weird, but there is something very inward-seeking about that, and the problem comes that you're never fulfilled, because your instinct that's put in you by God is to seek not your own kind, but a complementary. And so you're seeking after something that you don't even realize instinctually. You're seeking after some kind of complementarity that someone your own sex simply cannot give you. And therefore, it is true that among homosexual relationships, there are many, many, many more partners. And even in supposedly committed homosexual relationships, there's all sorts of infidelity. Because imagine you're constantly seeking something that the other simply cannot give you. And so what do? You look somewhere else, you look somewhere else, you look somewhere else, you look somewhere else, and it just never ends. And that's inherent in same-sex attraction, is that you're looking for something that the type of person to whom you're attracted can never give you. Never.
Perhaps the same could be said in the heterosexual case with serial marriage, of course.
Yeah, although again, at least then, at least it's not against nature. I mean, at least you are, in a sense, seeking, albeit in the wrong way, that which is your complement, as opposed to your same.
I was thinking,
you know what I mean?
In case of the shacking up, the number of marriages, it's no secret, has been going down, certainly in the church. The number of cohabiting couples, I've heard estimates from various priests saying it's about 80 to 85% of the young people coming for marriage.
Yeah.
Doesn't that also reflect maybe a self-centeredness rather than letting God's will guide our lives?
Sure, sure. In fact, upstairs on the, there's a little back table that I put in the vestibule of the church in this corner upstairs, and I had put out all of the pamphlets from my previous talks, because many of you had asked for them, and I had a whole bunch of them. Some of them I only had like 3 or 4 left, and some of them I had like 20 left. I put them all back there, and I had ordered a whole series on cohabitation, and I never ended up actually giving a talk on it. But there's a very good, the booklet, there's still a whole bunch of them up there. It's actually a letter written by the Kansas Catholic Conference of Bishops, the Kansas Conference of Catholic Bishops, a pastoral letter on cohabitation, and it talks about all of those things. So feel free to pick up one of those upstairs. But it's a very good point, gives that whole psychology of cohabitation, even heterosexual. Yeah.
If I could maybe just follow on this thread that, and I read this in an article, but it's a good food for thought for those of us that, you know, obviously we came here to hear this, so we care about it, but that this drive for same-sex marriage is not so much the problem, but a symptom of another problem, which is the rise in divorce rates, the couples either getting married very late or not getting married at all, not having kids, there's no bond to them. That this is perhaps a more natural outcome, that if marriage, I mean, one could argue in our society, marriage already has no meaning. If you don't need the marriage to live together, you don't need the marriage to have the kids, even if you do get married, you can go ahead and just get divorced anyhow. You just rip up the contract and try again.
Yeah.
That this is so rather than attacking the same-sex marriage, perhaps the better way to resolve this problem is to strengthen the
family marriage.
Let this whole thing die on the vine.
Yeah. Well, and I would say it doesn't need to be an either or. I would say we should do both. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, it is kind of symptomatic. And I think that's one of the reasons why our society is becoming more and more open to the idea of same-sex marriage. Because even though it is true that right now, in 2012, most Americans are opposed to same-sex marriage, and even though we have a very good chance of getting this law in Maryland overturned, I predict that over time, unless we really get busy as a church, over time, more and more people are going to become okay with same-sex marriage. And we might defeat it in 2012, but in 2022, maybe even fewer and fewer and fewer people. And I think that's part of it, is because marriage has fallen apart in so many ways, because sex is no longer related to marriage, because procreation is no longer related to marriage, because you can, you know, test tube babies, IVF, all that other stuff, because marriage is no longer important, people look at, that poor homosexual couple, you know, why can't we just acknowledge their relationship as a marriage? What's wrong with that, you know? And again, when everything else is falling apart, like, wow, well, okay, I guess so. You know, I mean, I think you're right. That's the problem. So, yes, ma'am.
I would like to address your comment. It's not the first time I've heard you make it. By the way, I'm not in favor of same-sex marriage, so that's not an issue.
I figured you weren't.
I just wanted to make that clear. You're describing the idea that if a same-sex couple had children in the marriage, in that relationship, mm-hmm. that it would be tantamount to child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's kind of pretty much over the top in terms of a judgment on that. I'm not trying to say that it's an ideal situation.
Sure.
Or, but there are a lot of unideal situations that nobody talks about. And I'd like you to describe how you think this is, like, in effect, a form of child abuse. What form does it take?
Sure, absolutely. Well, let me say this first, is I'm certainly not accusing those same-sex couples who adopt of having the intention of abusing their children.
Of course not.
I don't think that that's what they're looking to do, and I agree that I think they would probably be pretty shocked and angered if you suggested to them that this was tantamount to child abuse. And maybe that is a strong phrase, but I think that it is a very much so psychological type of child abuse, that you as a child are being made to accept as normal without even realizing that you are being made to accept as normal this disordered, unnatural relationship. Now, I will say this too, another form of psychological child abuse, I think, is when parents allow their younger children to be in the same house as their older children who are cohabitating. I think that that's one of those things that you said isn't talked about enough. That angers me to no end when I have parents who come in and they say, and they're kind of distraught because, well, my older son is at college and he's coming home with his girlfriend and you know, they've told us that they're already having sex and they're already sleeping with each other, so they're honest with us, and you know, why can't we just let them sleep together? Well, the younger kids are going to see that. They're going to see, why is, you know, my older brother going in the same room as his girlfriend and they're both spending the night there? Like, I think that that is a type of child abuse too. Because again, you are making your children, without them realizing it, accept this as normal. They are being made to believe that this is perfectly okay, that nothing is wrong with that. And again, I'm not accusing those parents of actually intending to abuse their children. What I'm saying is they are causing damage, which in many cases is very long-term damage, to a whole psyche that child is now being raised with in terms of thinking that certain things are okay and normal. You know, mommy and daddy didn't have a problem with it. So I think that's... Does that...
It doesn't convince me, I must say. I don't think that children in the same-sex relationship, that I do not think that's an ideal environment for any child.
Sure.
In some cases, in some same-sex relationships, there's actually a biological child there, if it's two women.
There is a way to do that now.
Yeah. What I mean is
to bring one to it.
Yeah,
right.
One to bring one to it.
Right.
Bring
sure.
a child to it. So it's not, you know...
well, they've actually come up with a way to...
Adoption. And
sure.
I'm not even talking about
sure.
adoption
sure.
per se.
Sure.
I'm not necessarily in favor of that either. I'm simply saying that I think that it's an over-the-top description to say that you think that it is, in effect, tantamount to child abuse. I just do not agree with that statement. If you want to say it's a certainly far from an ideal circumstance, as many children are in far from ideal circumstances.
Sure. Sure. Well,
you know, it's less than, you know, it could be, there are possible worse situations.
There are. There are. And you know, you're certainly free to disagree with me.
Well,
but hold on. I would make a distinction, though, between less than ideal and actually abusive. Because, again, a child that's being raised by a single parent whose spouse left them or whose spouse died, that is less than ideal but hardly abusive.
Oh, I agree.
Right. But I would go a step further. I would say that the child being raised by a homosexual couple is more than just less than ideal. Maybe it's not child abuse. Maybe it's not child abuse, but it's more than less than ideal.
It's the wrong word. It shouldn't be abuse. It should be shortchanged, because you are shortchanging the child from getting what the child needs.
It's
the wrong word.
It's disorder. I'm a social worker. I'm a master's in social work, and I've worked with families, and I do believe that it is psychological, emotional abuse, and I do applaud Fowler for being one of the few who will stand up and be honest. And the reason I say it is this: we have laws in our country, in our state, that you cannot have incest in a family. That's illegal, and that's disorder. It's unnatural. There are groups out there that think it's fine.
Sure.
And there are many families who hide that. So I agree that there are abuses that go on with children that shouldn't go on. And I think the Catholic Church has always taken a stand against abuse in any form. But we're talking about emotional, psychological abuse when you raise a child and teach them two men together or two daddies without a mom is normal.
Right. It's just perfectly normal. It's okay. Yeah.
Just like you would say if, you know, grandpa is in a relationship with his daughter, with mommy, that's disordered.
Well, let me give a parallel. Let me give a parallel example in a
child will be removed from a home for that in this state.
Sure. Yeah. Let me give a parallel. Let me give a parallel example. I agree with you, Marty. But let me give a parallel example in a whole different realm. Whole different realm here. The parents who, by their lack of mass attendance, teach their children without intending to teach them, but the parents who choose not to go to mass and who thereby display to their kids that it is okay to not go to mass, and it's okay to not worship God in that way that we're commanded to. In the same vein, I would say that's not just less than ideal. That's wrong. Perhaps not abusive, but it's wrong because whether or not you're trying to, you are displaying to them by your example and teaching them by your example that it's okay to not go to Mass on Sunday and worship God. So I guess that's perhaps just a parallel example, but So again, we can debate the word abuse all night, but that, yeah, Brett. Higher probability of pedophilia, I guess statistically, you'd probably get slapped for saying that. Yes.
Statistically, 95% of pedophiles are married people.
Hmm.
95%
of
pedophiles are married people.
Hmm. I think what you were saying was not of married people, but
he's talking about prisoners.
Right, okay.
And I'm talking about the general population.
General population, yeah.
So.
But yeah. I wonder what, and I don't know this off the top of my head, I wonder whether pedophilia is more prevalent among, I mean, just in general, the general population, among homosexuals or heterosexuals. That would be worthwhile to study. Yes.
Question. What is the purpose of
I think that's.
I don't understand the
man. I think there is some tax issues. There is some of that.
Pensions.
Yeah.
The real reason that they want is money. It's always about money. Okay?
Well,
I
would say that that's part of it. I would say that that's part of it. But I think part of it too is the desire, this idea that we are not equal until we can be the same.
It's approval.
Yeah, it's approval. It's if what you can have is called a marriage, then damn it, what I can have is called a marriage too. You know what I mean? It's
approval and
social approval. That is
yeah.
Social approval
and money.
And
money, yeah.
But also,
well, the money part,
and particularly the government.
To do with the tax credit for children. I mean, you know, so that's when I started to get really confused as to why is there such a big push for this? And why now?
Yeah, part of, yeah. I think that it's safe to say, now I do not want to, now be careful what I'm, listen carefully to what I'm saying. I'm not saying that every single homosexual person pushes the homosexual agenda, but I do think it's safe to say that there is a homosexual agenda.
Yes, there is.
And that part of that agenda is approval of what we're doing, normalization. It's the same thing, you know. If what you can have is called marriage, then what I and not to bring in some well maybe to bring in some other points. I think that's also one of the reasons why we see pushes in other areas as well. I mean, part of the whole radical feminist movement. Now there were a lot of good things to the feminist movement, namely gaining equality. Which is a good thing, and thank God that the feminists were there to do that. But part of it too was, if you can do that job, then I can do that job. I'm just as good as you. Well, that's not the point. The point
right.
is that we're different.
Child,
you
know,
yeah, yeah.
Because of money.
Yeah, and it can kind of turn into that sense of, if you can do it, I can do it. If you can have it, I can have it. And if I can't have it, you're depriving me of a right, you know? So, yeah, Jonathan. Because they've, and it's not their fault. Many of them, they've been raised to believe that it's perfectly normal.
It's not really necessarily like the school, because my government teacher is, you know, he's a liberalism. He's not like, you know, everyone has to be, you know, completely equal, so he's not like some crazy guy. But there is a lot of pressure to just, it's more of like, just like, we should all just, you know, kind of hippie-ish.
Yeah.
Well, because they twist everything. And they make you the bigot, the racist, the hate monger.
Yeah.
And that's never.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and again,
intolerance is the worst sin.
Yeah.
It's the only sin.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing too. Is one of the other things I love to preach on is how tolerance has been warped to mean tolerate sinful behavior. You know, when tolerance was first put out there, it meant you would tolerate the fact that someone's a different race than you. And you wouldn't make fun of them. You would tolerate the fact. You would tolerate other people's religions. You would tolerate other people's whatever
differences.
But you don't. We're not supposed to tolerate sin. We're not supposed to tolerate error. Now we're not supposed to blow people up either, who engage in sin and in error. But we're not supposed to tolerate it. We're supposed to go out into the world and make disciples. I mean, we are supposed to bring the light of Christ's truth to that. I mean, this whole notion of tolerance, it's been twisted.
One of the things that's not concentrated on enough is, for instance, females. The physical aspects of this is so mind-boggling, and that's what people need to unfortunately think about. You know, there needs to be a sign. This is for exit only.
Oh, good Lord. Thank you, Bob Root.
This is being taught to children.
Yeah. Well, no, but you're, I mean, it is, yeah, there are all sorts of health risks. It is nasty just to think about. But again, you, that should come with logic. That should come with, when you're in, like, I have a 15-year-old niece who has already learned that, you know, the square peg can't fit in the circle hole. You know what I mean? Like,
you just need a bigger hammer.
It just... Yes, sorry.
Father, in a practical sense, then, what will this mean for the church, for you and for priests? And I'm a little confused because, you know, like, I'm not a health part of the state will go and saying you must perform certain things. I obviously know that then we'll have lots of resistance and all that, but...
Well, the problem is right now they say... Right now, they're saying, oh, you're not going to be forced to do this. We say that now. But I have to wonder, you know, what's going to happen in 20, 30 years when they say that, well, if the Catholic Church doesn't do this, then you're not going to get to do any marriages. If you don't, you know, we're not going to let you, because, see, this is the thing, like, in the state of, well, in every state, in the state of Maryland and D.C., I'm licensed by the state to perform weddings. And, of course, I also have my faculties from the Most Reverend Archbishop to perform marriages. And so when I do a marriage, it is, at the same time, in one ceremony, it is a religious ceremony from the bishop that I've been given permission to do, and it's a state ceremony from the state that I've been given permission to do. And I wonder what's going to happen if eventually the state says, well, you can just keep doing your religious marriages, but we're not going to recognize your marriages until you start recognizing gay marriage. You know what I mean?
Is that a license that you have to pay for?
Yes.
I was wondering. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There's already been like a church that got in trouble and paid a fine or whatever because they wouldn't rent their hall to a gay wedding.
Right.
But this, to me, there's...
Yeah, but there's stories like this and stories... Like, another example was adoption. You know, we some of us were up at Our Lady Help of Christians last night and heard a wonderful talk up there. And one of the things that the speaker pointed out was, as soon as gay adoption was allowed, you don't want to accuse people of bad intentions, but it certainly appeared that way. Homosexual couples specifically going to Catholic charities and demanding to adopt when they could have gone to anyone else and adopt, but they go to Catholic charities, and of course, Catholic Charities says, "Sorry, we can't do this," and they were shut down. Catholic Charities was given an ultimatum. Either you do gay adoption or you don't do adoption at all. And so Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Boston said, we're not going to do them at all then. You know, if you're, you know, that is a good thing that the church does, but it's not central to our ministry. Our ministry, I mean, what we do as a church is we get together and we pray. And we'll always be able to do that, hopefully.
You don't think we're going to have a Genesis 1A amendment for Adam and Steve?
Adam and Steve. yes, Bill.
I think this actually, the gay marriage and then subsequently same-sex couples that have children, I think it goes beyond even marriage because, I mean, while that is the first sacrament I would think that there's an issue with, what about the other sacraments of a gay couple, of a same-sex couple wanting their children to receive other sacraments? Now, I would assume that you wouldn't turn down baptizing an infant. However,
yeah, it's already happened.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It seems that the other sacraments would be in peril too.
Yeah, yeah, they are. Well, and even ordination. Well, they tried pushing that too with women's ordination, and I did a whole talk on that too, by the way, on my website. But this idea that's discrimination somehow, that you're not an equal opportunity employer if women cannot also be ordained. And we're going to get that same crap when they say, well, if you're not going to ordain openly homosexual men, same thing. And with the case of baptizing these adopted children. Now, the church's position on that is you don't hold it against the child that they happen to have been adopted by two homosexual people.
Right, but where do you draw the line?
But this is the problem.
I mean, we've known both priests in the past who wouldn't confirm a kid because their parents didn't go to bring them the Mass every Sunday.
Right, and that's where the line comes in, is because what canon law actually says, which I think is very enlightening in this regard, what canon law says about baptism is that in order to baptize the child, the church has to have, quote, a well-founded hope that the child will be raised in the faith. So what that does not mean, that does not necessarily mean that the parents themselves are practicing Catholics. What it means is that I need to have a well-founded hope that this child will be raised in the faith. And there have been situations with heterosexual couples where the parents weren't practicing, but they said, look, the faith is very important to our grandparents, and they have agreed to take on the responsibilities of raising this child in the faith, meaning like they're going to pick them up and bring them to church every single Sunday and enroll them in CCD and get them their first confession and first communion and confirmation. And to that, the church would say, okay, fine. Again, not ideal. It should be the parents. But if I, as a priest or deacon, can have a well-founded hope that this child will be raised in the faith, well, then I'm not allowed to uphold, I'm not allowed to hold back the baptism. If I don't have that well-founded hope, if there is no reason for me to have that well-founded hope, if there is no well-founded hope, then I'm justified in saying, I'm sorry, I can't baptize, because it's not magic, you know. And some people think it is, you know, just get the kid baptized. But, well, no, it's now that they're baptized, if I baptize them, they then have a responsibility, and you then have a responsibility to raise them, you know. And it would actually be better not to baptize than to baptize and you to fail in those responsibilities. So, yeah, that's going to happen too, I'm sure.
You know, some of the school forms now, even at the lower levels, instead of having two blocks to choose from, they got sometimes eight or more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. On the official form.
All the different categories too now, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, even, I think it was it the European Union who was just last year? They're like standard passport now, instead of having the passport application, instead of having mother and father, was going to have like progenitor one and progenitor two or something like that. They're like, what?
See, now, when it comes to instruction, they already have all that crap going on in the schools. This is alternative A, this is alternative B, and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Now, when Thelma and Louise come, they're actually not
going to
teach the birds and the bees. What are they
going to
teach?
Yeah.
I have
a question, Mary.
Well, Father, if the church wants to, we have a close mutual friend who had said to me about 10 years ago, one day, Marty, the church is going to have to give up her tactics and status in order to do what we do and to stay in what we do. If we were to cut those ties, you know, tax-wise, and let's say you're going to give up your license to marry in a secular sense, if by the state, but, you know, is there any, could this, I mean, obviously in a totalitarian regime, anything could happen, but aside from that, in our country, could they come in and say, no, you must marry gay people? As long as we're not getting anything from the state, our tax rate, you know, break our taxes.
Yeah.
Do you know
what, it hasn't happened yet. So far what's been happening is, if you don't, we're not going to make you. But if you don't, you're going to get these fines or these restrictions or whatever. Because I think right now, most reasonable people would agree that you can't make someone do something against their will. You can just make it very difficult for them. So, for instance, one of the things that the healthcare situation has brought up. What did he say? Was it 10 million per year? Yeah. Notre Dame University was informed that if they didn't do the new healthcare thing, they weren't going to be forced. No one was going to come there with a gun and make them do it. But they would be fined $10 million a year for not doing. Now, I mean, that kind of fine is just completely ruinous. You know what I mean? Like, you're effectively putting them out of business. Now, are you making them do it? No. But, I mean, so those kinds of things, yeah.
What you were saying, something like, you see yourself in everything else
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so expensive now, and it's just going to keep going up, so you can't buy a gun. Like, what's the point of buying a gun if you can't buy ammunition for it?
Right.
You can see the same thing with the church, like you were saying, eventually, if things continue to get going, it's make it impossible.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is pull your gun out and say, yes, if I have any ammo.
Or just stock up on ammo now.
Father, so how do our Protestant brothers and sisters handle it? Most of them do perform same-sex marriage?
I don't know that I would say most. I would say the ones on the far left do. The Episcopalian Church is not opposed to it and actually came out in favor of it. No pun intended.
By same-sex ordained priests.
Yeah, well, bishop. I'm good friends with the Methodist pastor right here, Pastor Bruce Jones, and I asked him about the Methodist position. He said, right now, we're opposed to it, but it comes up for a vote. You know, it's coming up for a vote soon, so, you know, his district can choose to become in favor of it. So...
Did you ask if that's a religion of man?
Yeah.
We'll vote on that.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, some... Some are, some aren't. So. Yeah. Well, but the good thing is that this has actually solidified a lot of it. A lot of, even those people that we do disagree with theologically, especially the ones that we disagree with actually quite theologically, some of the Bible-thumping evangelicals, Muslims, Hasidic Jews, they're all in favor of protecting marriage, you know, and God bless them for it, you know. And that's something that we need to be able to do, is to say, okay, well, yeah, I disagree with you theologically, and we always will, but we can at least work together on this particular issue, because we at least recognize that... that the stake, the society is at stake, you know. So.
You see that the USCCB is already on all right now about social justice issues, balancing the budget on the backs of the poor. We're going right down the same road that got us into this.
Well, yeah. So, vote well. That's all I will say. Yes.
I could have one note that I think that something we should watch out for is the youth in our society or in our church, that they're the ones that, like the gentlemen are saying, are having to deal with this in the schools, where you've got a young group of people that perhaps haven't learned anything otherwise. There's been some surveys about even the young people that are so much behind us in the pro-life realm, mm-hmm. don't care about this. They're okay with it because it's been, you know, they watch Glee, they read about Peter and John, the happy couple, and their little stories that are in the libraries now. And it's been so much, you know, they've been steeped in it so much that they don't have a, so they're fine with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like we're going uphill on one battle, doing good on the pro-life, and losing it with the same generation in a whole different battle. You 4 hours here. We're fast.
But I will say this, you know, perhaps 10, 20 years ago, there maybe wouldn't have even been 4 of you here. So the numbers are going up, and what I find refreshing are, especially with this case specifically, those youth who struggle with same-sex attraction, and who still... understand the church teaching and embrace it and are trying to live it, you know? And I know a few of those. Not saying in this parish per se, but that's heroic witness there, I think, to be able to say, look, I find myself with this, but, you know, I understand what the church teaches and I joyfully embrace it. I accept, you know, I accept natural law. I accept what Scripture says, you know? So I think that generation is definitely coming along, and I think I'm kind of part of that generation, which is why I hang out with them a lot and try to help them along. So And there's a whole new generation coming up after me. In fact, many of you heard Jonathan Tini here is going to the seminary next year. Along with Greg Portner, who also couldn't be here, we are going to have two guys in the college seminary next year from our parish, so that's pretty good. So, any final questions, comments, concerns? Okay. Thank you for coming. Sign the petition. Get a yellow sheet, eat some more food.